Good day. This is Scott Glossner. I'm a senior director for Pfizer in the Chicagoland area as a cardiovascular field medical director. We're fortunate enough today to have Dr. Annabel Santos-Volgman join us to discuss the role of social media in medicine. She is a professor of medicine and senior attending physician at Rush Medical Center and Rush University Medical Center in Chicago since 1990. She is a pioneer in the area of heart disease for women, opening up a heart center for females. And since its inception in 2003, she was involved with the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women campaign, which led to increased awareness about heart disease in women. She's currently the medical director at the Rush Heart Center for Women. She's a fellow in the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association, and she's been recognized multiple times on multiple lists in the Chicagoland area for being one of the most influential females, as well as top doctors. I like a quote that Dr. Volgman has on her Rush page when she talks about patient care. She says, "When I speak to a patient, I'm affecting not only that patient, but the whole family, and maybe even the whole community, because that patient can affect so many lives." I think that's a good bridge today to the role of social media in healthcare, because I think social media is like her earlier quote. We're not just talking about one individual, we're talking about whole families or entire communities. So without any further ado, I'd like to have Dr. Volgman share why she got started with social media, especially with the busy schedule that she has. Dr. Volgman.
Thank you so much, Scott. What a great introduction. And I'm glad you said something about what I believe can influence the whole community, our women, mothers, they're providers of care for so many people. So I agree that was a great statement to bridge us to social media. So as you said, I am involved in social media. I was a reluctant person initially in about 2016. My fellow, former fellow, she was the professor now at Emory University, introduced me to Twitter. And I said, I really don't need anything else on my plate. I take care of so many patients and I take care of my family. I really don't want to get involved. And she said, Annabel, you know, there are a lot of people who could benefit from knowing that you wrote all these papers, and social media can really broaden your audience. And that was what convinced me, because I take so much time and effort to write papers that we publish. And if they are not read by enough people, we're really not educating the right people. So she convinced me that by tweeting about papers that we publish, that we can really broaden our audience. And this was actually validated by a paper that Lancet had on what the impact of social media has on publications. And they found that the more papers are tweeted about, the more citations they get, which means that people are reading them and making an impact. So I was convinced and I started tweeting in 2016, and it's really changed my life.
The thoughts of the impact of maybe social media on your medical practice or research, what are your thoughts around that?
So this has had a huge impact on my life, actually, because since I started tweeting and doing more social media posts, I started getting emails and communication that they want me to give talks at their organizations or universities or events. And one of the most interesting one was when I got a direct message on my Twitter page, and it said, "Would you be able to speak for a conference in Saudi Arabia?" I said, "Please email me an official invitation." And a few minutes later, I got an official invitation, all expense paid, and it was a legitimate invitation. And I took a chance and went to Saudi Arabia and met the most wonderful people that I have been able to work with over the last few years.
Is there one of the social media platforms that you gravitate towards? Is it LinkedIn? Is it Twitter, Facebook? Is there maybe why you use one over another that maybe you could share with listeners?
Thank you for that question, Scott. It's a great question. So when I was trying to figure out, you know, what I was going to do in terms, because I don't want to spend hours and hours doing social media, I really figure out what is my audience for what message I'm giving. So for my publications, I will tweet it out first to a lot of the people that I know. I will tag people that I know are interested in this information. So that's one key to to make sure that you amplify your message is to tag people who will retweet your message, and then you broaden your audience even more, because a lot of the people that I will tag have many more followers than I do. And so that really is a great way to amplify your message. So for papers and for medical and cardiology information, I will always tweet it out. If I want to reach a more public audience, so my patients, my public lay audience, I will put it on Facebook. But if I want to catch the attention of pharmaceutical companies, medical people, healthcare, business people, then I will use LinkedIn to post that message. So I do use different social media platforms for different messages.
Perfect. What about some of the health-focused platforms like Doximity, you know, where there's health rating grades or scores? Are those ones you look at or do anything with as well?
Yes, actually, Doximity is a great platform for networking and seeing what the pulse of the medical community is. They have a lot of op-eds, they have a lot of information, just like Twitter, but it's much more focused on medicine. And those are also very helpful. Doximity also has these tools that you can use to use their app to call patients or fax things to patients that are private and it doesn't reveal your phone number. So that's also been helpful, using Doximity.
And I know you'd shared with us kind of the role that Facebook and Twitter have, depending, like posting your medical articles on Twitter, Facebook maybe person with individuals. How about from the standpoint of research recruitment? Do you use any social media to help in the recruitment of patients?
You know, that's a great question. I have not yet done that, but we're about to launch a very important scientific research that I'm going to be doing. And I may use Facebook to recruit patients to enroll in that study. So it remains to be seen. I don't know if other people have been using that. I'm sure they have.
Well, I'd seen too, you had published in the space, you had an abstract a couple years ago about women in cardiology, the role of social media and advocacy of trying to recruit more females into the cardiovascular area. Maybe explain the role of recruiting other healthcare providers into different areas, specialty areas.
Thank you for that question. Such an important question. As you may know, as of 2021, there are only about 13% women cardiologists and the rest are men. And if we're going to take care of 51% women in our population, we need diversity in our clinicians because they bring such diverse information to different groups of people. And if your only source of information are for one group of people, it doesn't really reach or affect the people the same way as somebody who looks like them, who approach medicine in a different way. So what we're trying to do with the AHA, the American Heart Association, and the American College of Cardiology, women in cardiology groups, is to reach out not just to the residents who are already thinking about whether they should go into cardiology, but we want to start at the high school level. So we've done several programs. We just did one. We want to recruit Native Americans to think about cardiology. So the AHA actually just had a program with a high school in Arizona, and we had about 45 high school girls that attended this. And we were trying to encourage them to go into cardiology. By exposing them, there were about 5 female cardiologists that were mentoring them. By showing them what we had to do and what we look like, I think it encourages these young girls to go into cardiology. I was at a program in Kentucky, and there was a nurse at our program, and she said, if I had known that I could be a cardiologist, I would have gone into that. But the only options that I was given by my friends and family and my teachers were nursing if I wanted to go in the medical field. So I was really shocked by that. And so we are really trying hard to recruit more women, more girls to be interested in cardiology.
That's great. I think the line that I read from the article is, let us stick together, was one of the phrases, which is a good one. The other question I wanted to ask, and it was around education, and you'd published multiple articles in the social media area, was the role of the Altmetric Attention Score, the AAS score, and what that looks like from a medical article publication standpoint. Could you expound on that at all or share any of that information?
Sure. Every paper gets an Altmetric score, and it is a score that shows how impactful it is. So if you have a high score, it means that a lot of people read it and a lot of people have cited it. So the higher the score, the better. So we're always trying to make sure that we are helping that Altmetric score by tweeting it out, by posting it on Facebook and LinkedIn if it's appropriate. So you can help increase your Altmetric score by doing all the social media posts.
Great. Yeah, it may be newer for some of the listeners, and I think that's an important part when we talked before of just that awareness of there's the impact score that you have about journals and how many individuals they reach, but now with the social media, that can be expanded significantly.
I also want to add here that every journal now wants you to expose their publications to social media. They want to encourage you to post on social media. So every paper that I've submitted actually will ask for my Twitter handle and what I would tweet about. So it's very interesting that the journals have really come around to endorsing social media as a way to influence their readers.
That's great. So now let's look at the soup and nuts around how to get started. So if they're a beginner, maybe even a seasoned individual, we'll say a beginner, what would you say is a good way for them to get started around social media from an engagement standpoint?
So I recently encouraged my cardiology fellow who I work with in the office to start a social media page or an account, because she was not familiar with it. She was uncomfortable and anxious about starting one because she didn't really know anything much about it. But I encouraged her to do it. So while we were waiting for a patient, I said, okay, let's just start your Twitter account right now. And so she went through it. It was very simple. And I said, think about your handle and make it short because it takes up characters. And if you have a long Twitter handle, it will take up space and you have less words that you can say. And then you start following influential people, people who have a lot of followers you want to follow, and you want to like or retweet their posts if you feel that is appropriate for you. And so she started doing that, and now she's in social media. So now she's on her way to social media stardom.
That's great. That's great. Well, I think I'd seen that there's a Facebook page that Rush has. What challenges or how do you partner with like your institution or your medical societies when you want to discuss content? So whether it's American Heart or your academic center, are there pros and cons with partnering with those different institutions or societies?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's really a very casual and informal way. So what I usually do is I will tag at Rush Med, and that means that they will look at the post, and if they like what they see, they will like it and then retweet it. Or they could quote retweet it, which means that they'll say, we totally agree with Dr. Volgman. We're so proud of what she's doing, things like that. The American Heart Association and the ACC are also, they have their Twitter handles. And if you tag them, they will also look at your post. And if they like it, they can retweet it or like it and quote retweet it. So that would even really broaden your audience because they have millions of followers. For Rush, I know the person who tweets and I have a relationship with him. So I will reach out to him sometimes and say, by the way, I want to tweet this. Can you make sure that you retweet this and say something so that people can see it, you know, a bigger audience can see it.
Oh, that's fantastic. The other thing that bubbles up often with social media is how do you deal with privacy, your own versus patient privacy online or work versus personal posts? How do you kind of keep those separated, I guess?
Yeah, for somebody like me, it's not really that big of a deal. I think it's the celebrities who tweet and they want to make sure that they protect their children. But for cardiologists who want to share that they have a normal life, I will sometimes post something about my family if it will encourage people to know, especially young women, to think about cardiology as a profession. Because I think they think that it's just too hard to do everything, that how can I have a family if I'm taking care of patients in the hospital? So we've really tried to increase our audience, the women in cardiology groups, by showing what it looks like to be a cardiologist. There's a hashtag called I Look Like a Cardiologist. And I like some of the TikTok posts by some of the younger cardiologists where they're wearing high heels and they're reading echoes in their high heels and doing all these posts about, you know, I'm a normal, very feminine cardiologist who can do this. And I just love that because I can no longer wear high heels, but I used to. And so, you know, I think it encourages people to identify with young cardiologists who can do all those fun things and still have a really rewarding career in cardiology.
That's great. How about like from a heckler standpoint, maybe someone that doesn't agree with your post, you know, like a virtual heckler, do you engage? Do you avoid? How do you handle virtual hecklers?
I've been fortunate enough not to have a heckler, but one of my friends did have a virtual heckler and she reached out to us. And by the way, there's another app called WhatsApp and we have an otter raft. We call it an otter raft on WhatsApp. And it's about 10 female cardiologists and we share all of our trials and tribulations on a daily basis about what it's like to be a cardiologist. And you know, we support each other and we call it an otter raft because otters link arms so that they can form a raft so that they don't drown when they're sleeping. And so we call it an otter raft. And this is just the most wonderful group of women. We're just very positive with each other, support each other. So she reached out to us and said, you know, somebody's really heckling me on social media. What do you guys think I should do? And we said, first of all, block that person from your account so that you can no longer see what they're posting. And also just ignore them and don't engage, because the more you engage, the more you will continue the heckling. So that worked and the person stopped bothering her because she stopped engaging. So, you know, I think different people deal with it differently, but I think the best way is to just ignore, because obviously these people are just trying to get your attention and cause trouble.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed. Well, in that vein, there's the challenge, I think, in this day and age is identifying reliable information online. So there's the hecklers, obviously, or there's the misinformation. Kind of what's your thoughts or the take on information that maybe is out there that may not be appropriate? What steps do you think the medical community can take to combat that misinformation that's circling around on the internet?
Yeah, this is really easy because most people who post some information have the article that they're quoting or that they're trying to teach from or trying to inform from. So it's really easy because the link is right there and you can read the paper yourself and then verify what they're saying is true. And I've actually done this where I say, well, I don't agree with your opinion about this. And it opens up, you know, questions. And a lot of people are just really informing people about their new papers, the ideas. And they're reaching out for collaboration. And that's happened to me many times through social media, as people will see that I'm writing about certain things and they say, hey, can I work with you on something about this? And I've gotten many mentees to reach out to me asking my help to write their papers that they need mentoring for. So it's been really amazing to hear from other people that they need my help and that they would like to collaborate. So it's been so rewarding.
That's great. Well, you have to have a huge bandwidth from answering misinformation to collaborating to publishing. It can take up a bunch of your hours in a day for sure.
Absolutely. I want to just encourage people. You know, I'm 64 years old and I really, for many years, I did not publish a lot of papers because I was busy taking care of my family. But since my kids grew up and now they went to college and are not needing me on a daily basis anymore, I have been able to have a lot more time. So I want to encourage people, especially the women and the men who are taking care of young kids, not to worry that they're not publishing at this time. But, you know, there's a time and place for everything. And it wasn't really until my daughter went to college that I started writing a lot of papers. And it was the same time that social media took off. And so there is time to do everything. Don't be discouraged if you're not able to write 10 papers in a year or even 20 or 30. And one of my people that I follow, Mamas Mamas, tweeted that he wrote 100 papers in 1 year. And I said, oh my God, that's crazy. I was proud to have more than 100 publications, and that got a lot of, you know, quotes and remarks.
That's great. It's nice to get the information out so other people can learn from it, for sure. One of the articles that you had recently published was the top 100 Twitter followers in cardiology. And I wonder, off of that article, you mentioned the individual that published over 100 this year or the past year. Is there a favorite person that you follow from a social media standpoint, or maybe your top three, top five?
Yes, actually, Dr. Mamas Mamas is one of my favorite people that I follow. And he has, you know, several thousand followers. And what I love about following Dr. Mamas is that, first of all, I met him in Saudi Arabia and we really got to know each other then.
Sure. What it goes to the reach that social media may have. It's not just here in the Chicagoland area, but now you're reaching across the world, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. You know, I think that is the message that I want to send to a lot of people, is not only are you reaching the people in your hospital or your community, not just your city or your country, but it's an international reach. As a result of that, I've actually been invited to speak at many different countries.
So realizing that you will never retire, but is there a threshold of followers that you're trying to shoot for? Is it 100,000? It is 1 million? Is there a goal that you're trying to set for yourself? Like, I want to get this number of followers.
Oh gosh, no. My goal was to publish at least 100 papers. And I think I've done that. And everything else is just, you know, icing on the cake. So what I want to make sure is that I write meaningful papers. What I want to write about are things that matter to my patients.
You know, it's interesting, in looking at this topic for social media, I'd looked at some of the references that are out there. There's a paper by George in 2013 that discusses the AMA guidelines for ethical use of social media, emphasizing the different areas of confidentiality and privacy settings and things like that. And if you listen or read it, the flavor of the paper is the AMA focuses more on the risks versus the benefits. So that's why it's great hearing your thoughts, because I would say from your perspective, there's a lot more benefits than there are risk in involvement in social media. And certainly that's a almost 10-year-old paper right now, and things have changed. But just with the things that you've shared with us today, shows the role of social media and medicine are here to stay.
I agree. I think that about 10 years ago, there was a lot of negative press about social media. And so we listened to them and we wanted to make sure that we're very cognizant of those problems. And so we are very careful not to share private information about patients and also use it in a meaningful way and not just to promote somebody's career or their reputation, but to help other people to take care of patients. We're all in this together to learn from each other and to help each other. A lot of people will post case reports or cases that they don't know what to do, and they're just seeking for advice. And those I love, because everyone gives their opinions and most of the people will give the same opinion, but there are definitely differing opinions.
Certainly. So just to recap for those at home, the role that Twitter plays from Dr. Volgman's standpoint is reposting medical articles and tagging other people so they can connect with it as well. And then LinkedIn, maybe more from a business networking standpoint. But regardless of which you look at, it's probably worth putting your toe in the water to test out the role social media has, especially within healthcare today. I'd like to thank Dr. Volgman.
Thank you so much for asking me to speak about it. I have become a social media buff because I see how it's helped a lot of my colleagues and increase our collaboration with each other. And it's fun, and you're not alone in this world. You belong to this group, and find your niche, find your people, and I think you will like it.
Awesome. Thanks, Dr. Volgman.
This audio file is for U.S. healthcare professionals only and is intended to be listened to as it was originally produced by Pfizer. This audio file has been paid for by Pfizer, and the participant has been paid by Pfizer for their time. This audio file is not certified for continuing medical education.